Hey, this is your host, Daphne Laforêt, and before we start with this week's episode, I really want to introduce you to our main partner for the podcast, Catalog. And I couldn't be more grateful and proud because what they have built is seriously a game changer. Catalog is a work hub that replaces a whole stack of tools with a single platform that centralizes your people, processes, and knowledge, and it's completely customizable. But what is next level is that it uses AI to mold instantly to the structure of your business, which means you can get started straight away. Using just a brief description, it builds a bespoke platform precisely configured to run your company operations all in a matter of seconds. It is structured and seamlessly connected, meaning work becomes visible, processes are automated, and collaboration is supercharged. So go ahead and get started at catalog.com. That's catalog with a Q, and let me know what you think.
Welcome to the Remote First podcast, produced by Modern Leaders. Every other Tuesday, listen in to hear from large or innovative companies enabling an equitable and distributed workplace experience.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Remote First podcast. This week, I am with Claire Donald. She is the VP of Engineering at Moo, and also nominated recently, actually since the pandemic, basically by default nominated to the head of remote, as we say at Moo, to make this transition towards remote work at Moo. But what is very different at Moo, knowing that it's a manufacturing company, Claire will tell you more about that, is that you really have to deal between the office and the classic back, the classic setup that you had before with the new remote first approach and how you're mixing both together. So it's really how you mix hybrid and working the hybrid. And this definitely is the topic that has been on everyone's conversation everywhere that are trying to bring the office back or not enough office or trying to think like how much we can be remote first in a hybrid type of company. So I'm really happy to have Claire today join us. Thank you so much for joining, Claire. I'm so happy you are here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I'm looking forward to diving in and sharing some of my insights on this topic.
Yeah, and it's so cool. We met almost a year ago in Montreal at a Running Remote conference, and I was really eager to have this conversation, and we've been trying to have this conversation going for a while. So I'm really happy that we're finally sitting down and having this conversation. So can you please share a bit more, what's your role at Moo and what led you to become a bit of the nominated head of remote at Moo?
Yeah, sure thing. So yeah, I'm the VP of Engineering at Moo. We're an online design and print company. So like we said before, we have a very physical aspect to what we do. You know, we make products as well. So yeah, during the pandemic, it was quite a shift for us to move to people being forced to work remotely. We were one of these companies that mostly worked in office, had to quite quickly adapt. But during the pandemic, we wanted to use that as an opportunity to rethink through how we do work in post-pandemic or when things ease up a little bit. So yeah, really use that as a trigger for us to rethink. And we came up with this idea and concept of Work 2.0, we called it. What's the next iteration of work at Moo? And really wanted to start to think about how we could embrace some of the remote first principles, but still acknowledging the fact that, you know, our whole company can be 100% remote and never will be. And we still wanted to reimagine the workplace. And the reason I got involved was because I'm passionate about the topic anyway. Not just the topic, I'm quite into facilitation and thinking about ways of working. And to do some of these things requires a lot of technology anyway, doesn't it? So I was intrigued to the topic, overlapped a little bit with my role. I don't know, it's been quite cool and trendy to have dedicated head of remote type people or head of whatever you want to call it, distributed working. We were still in the pandemic at this moment in time. We were being very careful with our costs. And yeah, we all just rolled our sleeves up and chipped in with our individuals and specialism. So yeah, that's where it started.
And so what did it look like? So you say that you had to really decide like what would be remote first. So I know there is definitely the manufacturing part that is in person, and that's definitely like a classic. It's more of the technology part of Moo that became more remote. So what does remote first mean at Moo first of all?
I'll answer that in a slightly different way, because one of the first things we done was to think about all of the different roles. Because yeah, it's not quite as black and white as you describe it. And we didn't want to make big sweeping generalizations or put people in boxes. So we did have a good think about each of the different roles and identified some different categories and mapped each of the roles to a category. We came up with terms that are now pretty common practice, but yeah, office, hybrid, remote. we actually had one too many debates on what those titles would be. But, you know, and each one of them has unique guidance and attributes to them. And each one has something special about it as well. So there's no sort of tiering system. One isn't better than the other. We just really took a user or customer-centric, employee-centric view to it and thought about, right, how can we make each of those categories wonderful and amazing and create the best work experience for each of them, regardless of where the location is. So when we first started, there were fewer roles mapped to the remote category, most of them being in my technology team with a spattering across the business. Most roles were categorized as hybrid. We went down the hybrid flexible route, as it's starting to be termed now, rather than a sort of hybrid should path. For those maybe a little bit nervousness around doing that, we wanted to start that way and see how it went and learn. And yeah, mostly the manufacturing roles were office, but not exclusively. You saw that things like we design our own products. You know, we have physical designers. They have workshops to create the products. We have facilities people. Our photographers, like, they have a heavy in the office. Like, they make physical things. So it's not just manufacturing. And it's important for the rest of the company to feel that connection to what we're about. Like, we make products. So like a lot of the hybrid roles, we thought it'd be better for them to come in that little bit more often to maintain that relationship and that sync. We don't sell any digital products.
What does hybrid mean for those who have roles that are, let's say, remote? Okay, you know, that it would be possible, but then basically they maybe have to be more in the office for some reason. Like, what does hybrid mean? Is it a choice of location? Culturally, like, what does it mean at and also operationally? What does it mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll start from remote and work back into hybrid. And you wanted to, refresh what we'd done. And we didn't want this to come across, here's a clipboard and checking people off when they attended the office. You know, this wasn't about micromanagement or lack of trust. I mean, one thing that I noticed during the pandemic, that hybrid was getting a bit of a bad rep. You know, there was all sorts of connotations. You know, it was becoming a bit of a dirty word because people were assuming that hybrid meant you must come into the office Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and you will be there 9 to 5 so I can keep an eye on you. I'm sure some companies did and do fall in that category, but I think they're the minority, and there are lots and lots of companies out there like Moo that are actually trying to do hybrid in a very progressive way and embrace as much of the remote first principles as they can, which like isn't easy. There's no playbook to do this. I certainly feel like in our community, there's lots and lots of norms now and best practices about how you do remote, which is amazing for all the companies that can work more or less 100% remote. But the reality is that most companies can. The next challenge for our community is to start establishing some new norms for great hybrid. Yeah, like, we've not nailed it, I don't think. I think we're continuing to evolve and learn. But I suppose that's what inspired some of the stuff that I'm going to describe now in our remote and hybrid working policies. So our version of remote, because we are actually quite a small company, even though we have a worldwide presence and we have teams in the US and the UK, we don't have lots of different records across different places or different states. And bearing in mind that we're still trying to run as quite a lean team, we didn't want to introduce overheads of when we do remote, having people outside of the places where we already have employers of record. We wanted to test out if we could just do remote inside those areas first. And if that didn't work, and from a hiring perspective, then we would expand. So our version of remote is your remote inside the whole of the UK, or your remote inside Rhode Island, Massachusetts, or Colorado, which are the locations that we already work. Bearing in mind what I was saying about us being a physical product company and wanting to maintain the connection with the team, I provide guidance to the remote workers that they come into the office once or twice a quarter. Could be more often, could be less often. If they're coming in once or twice a quarter, they're meeting up with people that are outside their immediate team and with other people across the company as well. And that seems to have worked pretty well so far, actually, with the vast majority of people choosing to come in more often than that guidance, actually, which is interesting within itself.
And you also want the connection with everybody. Like, if there is a possibility to hang out, like, they wouldn't try to not see my coworkers if we all were in the same location, same city. Like, it's just kind of nice to have the freedom, but if there is potential to meet up and have some time together, people like to be in social environment. We're social animals. So.
Yeah, we've definitely found that, because having the UK remote guidance has helped with our hiring. you've been able to hire some, like I don't think I've got any engineering roles open right now, which is, that never happened pre-pandemic. My attrition rates have gone down. My engagement scores are up. You've got people all over the UK now. You've got people based in Scotland and Wales, whereas historically we were centred inside London. And yeah, even those people that live a little bit further out, they still love coming back into the office. And I was in the office the other week and there was some, like all of our photography on our site is done by our own in-house team. And all of our models are actually Moo employees. So they're just doing some photo shoot around the office, you know, some fake marketplace type thing. But yeah, when you come to the office, you feel very connected with what we do. So it's not just the social side of things, as much as that's great as well. So it means from a hybrid perspective, that you know the roles that we were tagged more as hybrid, it needed that sort of cross-pollination, if you want, with, across disciplines that little bit more. It's like our, like just take the example that I gave there of photography. Sure, the photographers were there, but there was people in the marketing team there as well. And they were working together on how they'd done their next campaign. So yeah, the roles that we identified as hybrid sort of were a lot more cross-functional and needed, but we felt it would be beneficial for folks to touch base that little bit more often. But still leave that to come bottoms up on them doing their scheduling. Like initially, we did think about the idea of everybody coming in on certain days, but when we analysed it a little bit more, we're like, actually, not all the teams need to work quite so closely together all the time, and they're in different time zones anyway. So because mandating things, like it probably wouldn't have solved things anyway. So we decided to set off on a let's see how it goes path, which we're still doing 2 years later. And yeah, the guidance that we've given to those hybrid workers was, you know, depending on your role and your work with your manager on what's appropriate, but somewhere between 20 and 40% of your time should probably be spent in the office. So it's not a 1 day a week or a 4 days a month or a,
you have guidelines, you know,
20 times a year.
Yeah, like potential, yeah, percentage of time that employees should be in an office. Is this tracked or is it more like a guidance of, also, I guess for you, you also need to know that you're spending for an office for a reason. So if in the end they're not spending time in it, you're not going to keep it.
Yeah, I'll come back to the office because we completely redone our physical spaces as part of this move as well. So we make it guidance and still do. I mean, we loosely track. We have some software that we call Cadence to help with people seeing who's in the office and when and scheduling time together. But it's for that purpose rather than, you know, checking who's coming in or not. We might go down that path, be a little bit more rigorous if we start to see the culture that we were trying to create wasn't happening. We'd maybe change or adapt, but we've not seen any need to do so. But yeah, we did completely revamp our office spaces during the pandemic as well, and this was a big part of our Work 2.0 philosophy. Yeah, we were maybe lucky that our office lease was due up at the end of 2020, so we had an opportunity to rethink and redo. So yeah, we've had a variety of different temporary spaces to achieve what I've just described there in all of our locations. But we're almost in our desired state of having what we're calling clubhouses, which are like that, as much as an office, it's a space that's part working space, part collaboration space, part event space. And yeah, they've been designed to work and operate that way. So rather than rows and rows and rows of desks, although there is some of that there, because that's what our people told us they wanted. Not everybody can work from home at the end of the day. So there is some desk space, but we have even bigger spaces for multi-purpose usage, like our all-hands area can also be used as a cinema or a gaming room or like yoga classes or whatever. Building like baristas, cafes, kitchens in each of our spaces, like real social hubs, as well as lots of different collaboration spaces and top spec hybrid meeting spaces to help folks work.
Hey everyone, I'm your host, Daphne Laforêt, founder of Modern Leaders, a consulting collective enabling you to walk the talk and scale your company for the remote-first future. Our team comes from over a decade of distributed team leadership experience, where we work with organizations from 25 to 5,000 employees. And I am so excited to have put together this podcast to share with you everything that we've been learning over the years. This is the Remote First Podcast.
I'd love to hear more about how you're making the office space remote first. So you're saying there's some hybrids, collab. So all of these are things so people come and collaborate in person. Is there a way that for those who choose to work in the office most of the time, but do collaborate with people who are How is that experience equitable, or trying to make the experience like smooth so that people can work together, even if they are like maybe three people are in the same room and two others are joining from other different location? How was the experience looking like? What's the hybrid remote first experience?
This is probably the space that we have the biggest opportunity to do better. Like, we've done some work already, and most of it's around ways of working, providing training and guidance to people around what good looks like. A very small example of some of the training that we've done. It was reminding people to be aware of the remote person. When you've always worked in the office, and as many of our employees did, it was like it's a shift in behaviour and a shift in just how you go about doing your work, to even think about, oh, we're not all going to be in the same place. So we've done lots of training during the pandemic on things like that, as well as providing guidance to folks on like good setups at home. Like the headset that I'm wearing right now came from a stipend that we provide to employees to help them get set up and working properly at home. And yeah, we've revamped all of the meeting room facilities, the VTC equipment in our office spaces to make them better as well. But yes, it's most like you can have all the best IT and equipment in the world. If you don't have people thinking about hybrid nature of their meeting, like it's always going to go south. Like, small example, we had a last minute change of agenda to one of our leadership meetings last night, which was going to move it from being more of a presentation to more of a discussion. And straight away, like multiple people, including the CEO, who's where, how are we going to facilitate this conversation? So, and that's the thing that you got to get into people's heads. It's just a little bit of forethought and a little bit planning up front. It doesn't need to take long. Like, we put 10 minutes thought into it, and hopefully we'll have a much more inclusive discussion today rather than it all being a bit awkward of looking around the virtual rooms and asking people to chip in. But I'd love to institutionalize and do more in that space. I think this is a downside to us not having a dedicated sort of head of remote distributed role. Writing some of these practices down and sharing it all comes more word of mouth rather than it being institutionalized.
It seems like even in an environment that is not only remote, there's actually even more need for guidelines and more need for ambassadors in the company, or as you say, making sure that people know how to facilitate. They know, like, they're being reminded about the people coming from the journey from different realities. You need a bit of these champions in different departments to make sure that this keep going in the company.
I think that's part of why the approach that we've took. I'm speaking as one champion, but I'm not the only one. There are lots of different people that have self-elected supports, I suppose, to are also passionate about this type of stuff and will happily write up a playbook in Notion and share it out. And then there's training by leading by example. If someone joins a remote meeting and sees somebody else using Miro or beforehand trying to do some async work to prep, like, you're training people in new practices without it being a big training program. And before you know it, somebody else is copying the same practice in a...
You standardize it? Is there a way for you to standardize the practice so that, you know, when there is a team who discover one way of working that is like really working well, you want to specify, often not, as you say, like, you're in the engineering team, usually engineering product, all they really are strong on the collaboration online because they use open source platforms, they follow all of this, so a bit more aware. But then it might be other team, like marketing and sales, are really good in their own operation and like creating like workflows, and they really work well together. How do you connect them together so that maybe there's one team that found something, we can actually spread it, and now everybody in the company is using the same kind of workflow to communicate, for example. So everybody, when you're onboarding them, are experiencing work the same way, compared to maybe some department won't have the same good experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah, try again on another opportunity for us that we could do better on. We use Notion as our receptionist, we call it. If you want to go look for something, you go to Notion first. That's the place that you would search first. Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite simple to use. Others may disagree, but none of these tools are perfect. But regardless of team, if you get into the habit of documenting, which is a good remote first practice, and you make sure you tag your information up correctly, you know, that, then anybody can search for it. So people are getting better at documenting things like that and making things easily searchable. We've got more teams starting to create libraries and signpost things together. So you don't have, there's still actually, again, a behavioural thing. Not everybody is comfortable with searching. They prefer to click and browse. So we're starting to, some of my Agile coaches are starting to build up these libraries as well of
Discoverability makes so much difference. The way you can discover information, there's so much time wasted in trying to just find what you need to be able to do your work. So, yeah. So what do you change as you move in the in-person practice? For example, you say there is a lot of people meeting in person. You're training them to be able to be more aware of what's going on. So what are you doing? What kind of training are they getting? What kind of tips are you giving people who are working in hybrid?
We gave everybody the same training, we debated whether we should do that or not. But I think, you know, just gives everybody the same, the remote first principles. So yeah, regardless of your role, like you may think you're an office worker, especially when a lot of our manufacturing team are in the States, regardless, like they were always going to interact with the people in the UK in a virtual way, even if they're in an office as well. Like they're still going to have to communicate virtually. So you gave everybody the same training. Where I've found it, or where it's been a little bit harder, it's time zones and the office piece. And when we have folks in the States who are in the office doing their work, say four times a day, they're used to in the afternoons, it's been a little bit quieter because the UK folks we've all wrapped up and they will gather around a whiteboard and do X, Y, Z because they are all there and they're in the office. And then it's harder for them to then, or they don't automatically think about how they then share that output with the people that weren't there. So that's been quite hard.
Like training them to make sure that everything that happens in person is logged somewhere so that someone can take up.
It's still shareable. Yeah. And as far as they're concerned, we've left it on the board. Like we can all see it. But the people in London can't see it. But at the same time, I've had the exact opposite conversation with my team who are very hot on asynchronous working and I'm very good at documenting their work. And they're like, I've done all my week notes and I've written all this stuff down, but nobody in the office is reading it. I've been saying to both of them, you've got to meet people where they're at. You can't just assume that somebody's going to all of a sudden be a guru at your async ways of working. It's actually quite a hard thing to learn and very alien to someone that doesn't actually need to do it as often. So they rethought some of this and they've actually planned to go visit America a little bit more often to help with some of that. And rethought some of their practices around, they could both meet each other where they're at. So I think there's something there on everybody being empathetic to each other's situations. And it's easy to say that we should have a playbook for everything. And of course, there can be guidance and best practices and the like. But life happens, doesn't it? You've got to figure it out. And different teams have different challenges as well. It's like a constant evolution.
And have you tried to, so those you say when you say it's difficult for those who are in person to actually have the, where do they go? If they wanted to do that, if they wanted to say, okay, we had a meeting and we want to put up to the world and move the notes from or the takeaways from our meeting, where do they go for that if they wanted to do that?
I mean, they still have access to all the same tools. So our virtual headquarters, if you want, our virtual infrastructure, everybody has access to, actually every single, even machine operator on the manufacturing floor has access to Notion, Slack, G Suite. Like our whole virtual infrastructure is available to absolutely everybody. It's more about their default, the behavior and their default practice of updating it there. It's just not something that they need to do as often. So it's harder. So the mechanism is there and available. Yeah, it's more the behavior change pieces. It's more difficult, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, all of this is change management. It's a hard piece of work, and changes that it's always hard anyway. And then if you bring on new tools, it's more change, and people are I think change fatigue. With the pandemic, there's a lot of change fatigue, and they're like, okay, look, I'll do this, but just give me the minimum. And sometimes I say with what you use already, how could you make it a bit better? How can you improve the process with already what you're using so it's not too daunting? For example, that meeting, you say they're using a board. I think, how they created a mural to fix at the beginning the hybrid problem. They actually created a mural first, not for remote teams, but for companies that were global and exchanging things and just taking pictures of boards. And they were use this platform with have connection now with big screens. I think it's just Microsoft Surface that they use. And then you can use Mural technologically in the office while somebody else can join remotely or can access that board and be able to go see the notes that were taken. It's just, it's expensive hardware to put that together in an office. It's
But you know what? This is the type of thing that we're still fitting out of some of our offices. We're not 100% done, but those are the types of technologies that we'll implement as we do it. So Yeah, we've still got more to do. We're not done in all of our office fit
outs. Hybrid is not a dirty word. So I want you to tell me what you mean. Like, how do you, can you sum this up into like why you think first people think that it's a dirty word, about like summarizing a little bit, and then like why you think, what do you think is good with that hybrid setup?
Yeah. So I think it became a dirty word during the early stages of the pandemic. And as people were embracing remote working, you know, I'm a firm advocate of, they didn't want to give it back. So there was a fierce resistance to any sort of return to office. And yeah, all the examples that we've seen were about big mandates, weren't they? So like hybrid got associated with the word mandate during the earlier stages of the pandemic. Yeah, exactly. Although I see it softening a little bit. And I've learned some new terms now, like there's hybrid fixed or there's hybrid flexible. So I think what I've described is hybrid flexible, which I think is the future. And I actually think that's harder to define, implement, do well than fully remote, actually. But the reality is that for the vast majorities of companies, they just cannot be 100% remote. And yeah, I think that's the challenge that we've got now of helping define what great hybrid is. And
I think it's cool to have both. I think the main issue that we've seen also in 2023 with the fact that there is less jobs, a lot of layoffs. So then it's like the power struggle moved a lot. So before it was like that we need more talent, so we're going to give everything. And then now that they have, we have to lay off everybody and now everybody is left. Well, now we're going to change everything the way we want. I think this is where it becomes a dirty word because it's, you're trying to put chains on me so that I could stay in the office and you could watch me. So one day a week, you're forcing me. So the fact that you're saying that, we don't want to force people, it's a flexibility thing because we want people to be able to meet. We want people to feel creative and have a place to go. And I think that the future,
taking that employee-centric or like an even a user-centric view, like we're a very customer-centric company. So I've just put that same lens on our employees and been really clear around why we're trying to do things. It most definitely isn't to keep track or monitor our behaviours as a company have enforced that. And it's working well for us. Like we've got our highest engagement scores that we've ever had as a team. Our attrition is low. People are happy. We're doing well as a company. So this hybrid flexible thing seems to be working for us.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming here and sharing your story. And I'm really looking forward to follow Mu and see how this is evolving. And if you're publishing, I don't know, case studies of how your offices are and how things are looking, I'd love to see them. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, sure, you'll come. And if you're ever in London, pop into Camden and I'll show you around.
I will for sure. I'm not too far. Thank you, Claire.
Great. Speak to you soon.
Thank you for tuning in to Remote First. You can find all links and show notes in the episode description. And if you found value in this show, we'd love your rating on your listening app of choice. Thank you for being here. See you next time.